From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall, in for David Gustina. Coming up on the Legislative Gazette, is there a secret slush fund for Governor Andrew Cuomo and state legislators? Our political observer Alan Shartok weighs in on the Southern Tier special election that may tip the scales of power in the state Senate. And we'll take a look at the economy of an upstate New York county that is set to play host to one of the state's first licensed medical marijuana facilities. Those stories and more coming up on the Legislative Gazette. A fiscal watchdog group says it's uncovered what it calls a secret slush fund used by Governor Andrew Cuomo and state legislators to fund pet projects around the state. But the governor's budget office says the grants are subject to oversight. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Ken Girardin with the Empire Center describes a fund that resembles the old member item system. That gave lawmakers millions of dollars for pet projects in their districts, but this one is on steroids. He says the money is borrowed and the recipients, ranging from $5 million to CBS to upgrade the studios for Stephen Colbert's new show to $25 million for a shopping mall, don't seem to be vetted by any independent criteria. He likens the $1.1 billion fund to one big credit card that the state's been using for the projects.
This is a new kind of pork that's happening completely outside public view. The only thing we're ever going to see from this is the bill for $1 billion of borrowed money.
The fund, known as the non-controversial sounding State Municipal Facility Program, was part of the 2013 budget. Bonds would be issued through the semi-independent entity, the State Dormitory Authority, for $385 million. The money was supposed to finance upgrades to government-owned properties, such as repairing village halls or state roads. But in 2014, that definition was expanded. It now includes economic development projects, and the fund was increased to the present $1.1 billion. The Empire Center used the Freedom of Information Law to obtain a list of the projects, and after waiting 4 months, on the final Friday of July, they finally got the details on 588 projects worth $187 million. Some are big-ticket items, like $35 million to the State University Nanotech Center, and the money for the mall on Staten Island. Many of them resemble the former members' items, though, like the purchase of a new fire truck or money to a senior center. Girardin says it appears that many of the items could be funded more directly without the state having to borrow the money.
But that's not the biggest issue.
He says it's troubling that no one seems to have any idea up until now about how the $1 billion is being spent.
The legislature and the governor have together created this shrouded slush fund that no one can see into, and they're free to dish out money with zero accountability. And that's deeply concerning to us.
The fund also takes the widely criticized member item practice one step further. Under the old system, state lawmakers' names were listed next to the allocation grants. Those lists caused legal troubles for some legislators in the past when it was found that they or their relatives were personally profiting from the grants.
Several people went to prison because we connected specific grants with specific people.
Girardin says there's nothing illegal in what the governor and the legislature are doing, as far as he can tell, but he says the lack of transparency is unprecedented. Governor Cuomo said he'd abolish member items, and no new grants under the old system have been authorized for legislators. A spokesman for the governor's budget office says the Empire Center report is not entirely accurate in its assessment of how the grants are distributed. Morris Peters says in a statement that there is indeed oversight and that the grant applications are subject to a rigorous agency review process. He says they must also be ultimately approved by the budget office. And he says there are limits on what types of projects can be authorized. Peters says the program does not operate all that differently from normal appropriations for roads and other infrastructure. Still unanswered, though, is who chooses the grant recipients in the first place. According to the Dormitory Authority's website, the grants are awarded not by the authority, but by local elected sponsors. Those elected officials are not named. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now is our political observer, Alan Chartok. Alan, Republicans hold a slim majority in the New York State Senate right now, and a special election is heating up in the southern tier between Republican Fred Akshar and Democrat Barbara Fiala. That's to replace Tom Libous. Could this help tip the balance, and how do you think this will shake out?
No, indeed it could, and there's a great deal at stake here. It's a very good question, because Cuomo has helped recruit this very popular Democrat, but in a Republican district. Now, the rap on Cuomo among many Democrats is that he doesn't really want to see a Democratic Senate. He wants a Republican Senate to continue. That way, he can be the good guy and they can be the bad guys when it comes to progressive legislation. So now he has this woman who used to be the county executive. She's very bright, and she is an attractive candidate in the best sense of the word. And so the real issue will be whether or not Cuomo decides to really back her candidacy, to put his shoulder to the wheel, and to get her elected. Or is this going to be one of these things in which he shrugs and says, well, you know, I tried, and keeps the Republicans in power once again? I don't have to give anybody a history lesson, but the whole history of Cuomo and the Republicans is, first, he said he was going to veto the apportionment bill, which allowed them to draw their own districts. And guess what? He gets elected and he doesn't do it. And then in each case, he has been very quiet when it came to supporting Democratic candidates for the state Senate. I think he has a point when he thinks that some of their misbehavior in the past has been reason for not supporting them, the Democrats, that is. On the other hand, we see that a fair number of Republicans are getting indicted now. We have the number two guy, Mr. Libous, out of the legislature, out of the Senate, because he's indicted and then convicted for having lied to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And then we have another series of Republicans, including the leader himself, Dean Skelos, out as leader because he's indicted. Will Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney, this question now goes, be the decider of who goes and who lives and who dies? And right now, it's very, very close. I believe Cuomo wants the Republicans in the Senate to stay in the majority party, but we'll have to see whether or not he is so sensitive to the criticism he's getting from rank-and-file Democrats that he actually does something.
Now, speaking of Cuomo, could he be a potential running mate for a potential run by Joe Biden?
Well, you know, I've been pushing this story like crazy because I was so interested in it. Look, here's the way it works. Cuomo is sort of trapped. He has to run for a third term, but his popularity is going down. In the last election, it's true he won, but he got a million less votes. His negatives are very high right now. So you're Andrew Cuomo. Where do you go? What do you do? If you run for a third term and you win, which he very well might, then you can have one more term. But like his father learned, there's just so much you can do. When the father ran for the fourth term, he was out. Now, where could Cuomo go? Well, he's already been in the cabinet, thanks to the Clintons, his sort of mentors, and he was at HUD. So he can't go back there. That'd be going backwards. Could he be Secretary of State? I don't think so. Could he be Attorney General of the United States? Not a brilliant legal mind. Now, Joe Biden comes to LaGuardia Airport, stands next to Andrew Cuomo, and says the most extraordinary thing. He says, this is the best governor in the United States, or something very close to that. Can you imagine? Well, now, if you're Andrew Cuomo and you have grand designs on being president, and I don't think there's anybody who doesn't think he does, and you hear that, well, then, what's the chances that you would like to be nominated as the vice presidential candidate if Joe Biden actually takes on Hillary Clinton and wins. I'm fascinated by that.
New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman's office has announced that it's investigating the death of Raynette Turner, who was found dead in a jail cell in Mount Vernon. It's the first time Schneiderman is using the power that Cuomo gave him to investigate cases of death in police custody, and that was last month. Is this a good place to start?
Look, first Schneiderman asked for the power to supplant the district attorneys in these very sensitive cases in which a police officer or a justice institution is accused of having either killed or looked the other way or whatever else. Because police departments and sheriff's departments are very close to the prosecutors in those areas. They have to work together. So the whole idea from Cuomo was that I'll take that power and give it to Schneiderman, the attorney general of the state of New York. But let's remember for a second that Schneiderman once asked for that and was told no. So now he gets what he wants. This has infuriated the district attorneys in the state, including David Soares, who is the very important district attorney from Albany, which is where all the political mischief happens. And Soares and the other DAs are furious that Cuomo has stepped in and supplanted them and says, in the end, we're going to have to do all the investigating anyway. So what's this all about? Now, in Westchester County, we have a Republican district attorney. We have a Democratic attorney general. One and one makes two.
Thank you for joining us, our political observer, Alan Chartok.
My pleasure.
You're listening to The Legislative Gazette, a program about New York state government and politics. I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall. The carbon dioxide reduction plan announced this week by President Obama was inspired in part by a system already up and running in the Northeast. The Cap and Trade, or Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, is in effect in 9 Northeastern and Mid-Atlantic states. Judith Enck, the Region 2 Regional Administrator for the EPA, spoke with the Legislative Gazette's Brian Shields about the president's plan.
The Clean Power Plan that President Obama announced would require a 32% reduction in carbon pollution by 2030 from all fossil fuel power plants in the nation. And the way EPA developed the plan, it provides maximum flexibility to the states. So a state can decide how they want to comply. They can participate in a regional cap and trade program like the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. They can make intense new investments in solar and wind and geothermal energy. They could decide to have more efficient coal plants if they wanted to. But certainly cap and trade programs, which is a market-based solution to climate problems, could be the central part of a state program. And so when EPA was developing the Clean Power Plan, we were very much informed by the experience of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which in fact originated in New York. It includes 9 states across the Northeast that work together to drive down carbon pollution. And we believe if you match the cap and trade programs with aggressive commitments to renewable energy, there can be a pretty dramatic shift away from dirty energy and toward cleaner energy.
Is this strictly regarding the power plants and how the states generate their energy, or are there other factors to this, such as increased mass transit and other ways to reduce carbon emissions?
Well, the Clean Power Plan only deals with the way power plants generate electricity. EPA is doing a lot of other important work on transportation. 27% of U.S. emissions of carbon come from the transportation sector. So, for instance, we've adopted regulations back in 2012 that doubles fuel efficiency standards for cars, saving consumers $8,000 over the lifetime of the vehicle. But the announcement this week only deals with fossil fuel burning power plants, which is the largest source of carbon pollution, accounting for about a third of all domestic greenhouse gas emissions. So this is a real boost for clean energy. and a recognition that climate change is here. 2014 was the hottest year on record, and 2015 is on track to be even hotter than 2015. New York is struggling with sea level rise, with damage to health, with damage to agriculture. So this is requiring a pretty fundamental shift away from electricity sources that pump a lot of carbon into the atmosphere.
When people open their power bills as this plan progresses, will their rates be going up, be going down? Will it have any effect at all on the monthly rates they pay?
Well, we think that by 2030, which is when the regulation will be fully in effect, household electricity bills will actually go down by about $7.
That's Region 2 Regional Administrator for the EPA, Judith Enck, speaking to the Legislative Gazette's Brian Shields. The economy of rural Fulton County, New York, has struggled for years, but with a new medical marijuana cultivation center on the way, officials are hoping New York's burgeoning biomedical industry will help draw new business to the region. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
On the last day of July, 5 of 43 applicants were awarded licenses by the New York State Department of Health to cultivate, process, and distribute medical marijuana. Company Empire State Health Solutions is working to begin distributing the drug from its Fulton County facility. Chief Operating Officer Michael Newell told WAMC that the site in the Mohawk Valley was chosen for its central location and proximity to major roadways.
Having grown up in Galway and Amsterdam, I was well aware of the unemployment rate in Fulton and Montgomery County, and started thinking that that was pretty centrally located, and was there a place that we could site the facility there. And as I started looking at that, the Tryon Technology Park popped up.
The Tryon Technology Park and Incubator Center was converted from a state-operated juvenile correctional facility. Empire State Development transferred the property to the Fulton County Industrial Development Agency in 2012. Jim Mraz, executive director of IDA and Fulton County Planner, is excited for the Perth facility's first tenant.
We're hoping this is the start of something big, and there will be something great for this region if we can replace and all of the jobs that were lost when that facility was closed.
At its peak, the Tryon Residential Center employed 350 before closing. Empire State Health Solutions anticipates creating at least 75 full-time jobs. While electric, gas, water, sewer, and fiber optic internet were already available at the site, over the last year, the county and IDA have made a few improvements, including a new access road and rerouted sewer and water lines. Mraz said Fulton County commissioned a study for the best industrial uses at the Tryon site.
And the number one cluster is biomedical research and development. Empire State Health Solutions' proposed pharmaceutical manufacturing facility is a perfect fit.
And officials hope the company will jumpstart the 500-acre Tryon site and bring in more tenants. Ron Peters is president and CEO of the Fulton County Center for Regional Growth.
By bringing in this group, if we can go out and we're going to try to attract other similar kind of biomed groups, I think it's going to probably change the landscape of the Tryon Technology Park.
Peters also praised the site's rural setting and central location.
Close proximity to Saratoga, very close proximity to Albany, and it's close proximity to all sites north and west.
Empire State Health Solutions will distribute medical marijuana to Broome, Albany, Westchester, and Queens counties. Elsewhere in our region, Etain LLC will manufacture in Warren County and dispense in Albany, Ulster, Westchester, and Onondaga counties. PharmaCann will operate out of Orange County and distribute the drug in the Bronx, Erie, Onondaga, and Albany counties. Columbia Care NY will dispense the drug in Clinton County.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall. New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman this week revealed indictments against 20 alleged members and associates of a Troy-based gang. including an ex-Water Vallette police officer on charges they operated a high-volume drug trafficking ring. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was at the New York State Police Academy for the announcement.
During the year-long investigation dubbed Operation Trojan Horse, Schneiderman says a team of investigators seized more than 1,000 grams of cocaine with an approximate street value of $100,000 and more than 100 bags of heroin and more than an ounce of raw heroin with an approximate street value of $14,000. According to the 249 counts in the felony indictments unsealed Tuesday in Rensselaer Supreme Court. According to the indictments, the narcotics distribution ring was operated out of Troy by a gang called the Young Gunners, the largest provider of cocaine, heroin, and illegal prescription drugs in the city.
This was a very violent gang. These folks were shooters. The leader of the gang was a 21-year-old Troy resident named Daquan Murray. Mr. Murray was known as Benji Got the Juice. Well, we've got Benji, and he ain't got no juice anymore.
Gang members and their associates allegedly purchased large quantities of drugs from an unknown supplier in the Bronx and then brought the narcotics back to Troy for distribution throughout Albany County, Rensselaer County, Saratoga County, and elsewhere in and outside of New York State. The AG says 29-year-old Water Vallette police officer Nicholas Pontor allegedly purchased large quantities of cocaine from the drug ring on an almost daily basis.
The indictments allege he actually purchased drugs while on duty, in uniform, and in his patrol car. We know of more than 150 communications between Mr. Pontor and his drug dealers in the Young Gunners, and Mr. Pontor is being charged with conspiracy and multiple counts of official misconduct and drug possession.
Pontor resigned from the police force in late June. Schneiderman could not say if that happened because Pontor got wind of the drug probe. Police chiefs in Troy and Albany believe the fall of the Young Gunners may halt the street violence both cities have suffered in recent years. A popular YouTube rap video called Sending Shots was filmed in Troy. One of the rappers mentions his gunners and a ride to Albany's 2nd Street and Lexington Avenue, a gang hotspot. Troy Police Chief John Tedesco.
These indictments are directly related to the violence in Troy. The group that you're seeing here that were indicted are directly responsible for a vast majority of gun violence in the city of Troy.
Albany Police Chief Brendan Cox agrees.
We learned early on that with the case going on in Troy, that we knew that there was a nexus between Albany and Troy with some of the violence going back and forth, that there were some individuals from Troy coming over to Albany and causing violence, and that there were individuals from Albany carrying over some retaliatory violence into the city of Troy. And that's when we signed on, and this was a really good day because it takes a lot of those violent individuals off the street.
The AG says most of the 20 named in the indictments are in custody. Authorities are on the lookout for the rest. The defendants face maximum sentences between 9 and 24 years in prison. Depending on the individual's crime history, Pontor faces more than 5 years in prison.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
With this week's Legislative Notebook, I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall. Two political advocacy groups are considering a legal appeal after a New York State Ethics Board rejected their request to shield major donors from public disclosure. The New York Civil Liberties Union and Family Planning Advocates had asked the Joint Commission on Public Ethics to allow them to withhold the names of the donors because they said identifying them could put them at risk of harassment. The commission rejected the request this week, saying they had not shown valid justification for the exemption. The union representing 20,000 New York prison guards is now represented by a law firm that includes former State Attorney General Dennis Vacco. Vacco's Buffalo-based law firm has merged with the Albany-based firm that was representing the New York State Correctional Officers and Police Benevolent Association. The union says the new merged firm will handle its government relations. Vacco, a Republican, says his firm is cooperating with an inspector general's inquiry into the recent prison escape of two killers in Northern New York and expect to participate in formulating policies and procedures that follow. And that does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. A copy of this episode, number 1532, is available online at wamc.org or by calling 1-800-323-9262. Again, that's 1-800-323-9262. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.